before we actually begin, let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. And let's place what we're about to do within the framework of benefiting other living beings. And do this by learning about ourselves, being able to identify our weaknesses and our faults, and learn the ways to overcome them, and to recognize our good qualities and our talents, and learn the methods to enhance them. So with this in mind, then we'll share in the Buddhist teachings this morning. Okay, so we've been going through this Tibetan poem for the last almost 3 years. It's a wonderful poem called 37 Practices of Bodhisattvas. A bodhisattva being someone who's developed the altruistic intention to become fully awakened for the benefit of all beings, and who is very fully engaged in practicing the path to achieve that goal. And that path includes developing love, compassion, generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, joyous effort, concentration, wisdom, many other good qualities. Okay, so the poem's been talking about how to do this. And so today, we've been doing one verse every month. So today we're on verse 28. We're getting there. Yeah, and this one's on joyous effort. Okay, so I'll read you the verse and then talk about it. Okay. So it says, seeing even hearers and solitary realizers who accomplish only their own good strive as if to put out a fire in their head. For the sake of all beings, make enthusiastic effort, the source of all good qualities. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. Okay, so this requires, there's some new words in here I'm sure you've never heard before. Okay, so hearers and solitary realizers, when we talk about the Buddhist path, we talk about three different paths that people can take. The what's called the hearer and solitary realizer path, they lead someone to liberation, to become what's called an arhat. If someone develops the altruistic intention to benefit all beings, they follow the bodhisattva path, and they become a fully awakened Buddha. Okay? So the people who follow the bodhisattva path and who are working not only to free themselves but to free all living beings from our situation in cyclic existence, those beings are considered, I guess you could say, superior, in the sense that their motivation is extending to all living beings. They're not just seeking their own personal liberation. So it says, you know, when even the hearers and solitary realizers who accomplish only their own good, meaning these people are working for only their own liberation, they strive as if to put out a fire on their head. So they work really hard. So, you know, how about us? You know, for the sake of all living beings, we're the, you know, we want to be the kind of person who works for the sake of all living beings. So if these others who aren't even working for the benefit of all living beings are practicing their spiritual path very diligently and conscientiously, then those of us who have the altruistic intention, or our intent on developing that altruistic intention and becoming fully awakened, then we should do likewise. Especially, you know, because we're working for the benefit of all. So here, when it talks about these practitioners strive as if to put out a fire on their head, you know, you have to understand that image in context, because, you know, when we think of, you know, your head being on fire, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is like terror and freak out. Okay, that's not the meaning of this verse, that if you're a spiritual practitioner, you practice because you're terrorized and you freak out. Not like that. But it means like if you have a fire, the analogy, you know, it's only an analogy, don't take it literally. But if you had a fire on your head, you would be single-pointed about putting it out. You wouldn't be like, well, it's a beautiful day, I think I'll take a walk, sleep in today, have a nice leisurely breakfast. No, you wouldn't, you know, sit down and watch five movies. You would go and get, you know, put out the fire on your head. You wouldn't be lazy and procrastinate. So that's the meaning of it, okay? So in our spiritual practice, what it's getting at is, you know, to really put our effort into our spiritual practice without getting distracted by all sorts of other things. Yeah. And it's very easy to get distracted by all sorts of other things, as we all know and experience. And so, therefore, when they talk about joyous effort, they talk about it as an antidote to laziness. Because laziness is the chief thing that, you know, keeps us, I mean, let alone do our spiritual practice, we can't even do the dishes when we're lazy. Okay, so we have to do something about our laziness. In a spiritual context, laziness has a slightly different meaning than in regular life, as we'll see, okay? So there's three kinds of laziness. Yeah, some of them correspond with the laziness in regular life that keeps us from getting anything done, and some don't, okay? So the first kind of laziness we have to work on and apply joyous effort to is the laziness of right? Yeah. Sleep, yeah, lounging around, saying to yourself, I'll do it tomorrow, you know, today I'm just going to rest, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, so in our regular life, this is clearly an obstacle when we're lazy, you know, because you can't get your regular, you can't even keep your house clean, let alone, you know, to get a job and perform the functions at your job and things like that. And spiritual practice, if you're lazy in this way, then you can't make it to the meditation cushion, you can't make it to the Abbey to hear teachings, you can't even make it to your computer to turn on the Abbey YouTube channel, you know, even it's right there and you don't have to do much. But, you know, this laziness just overtakes us. Okay, so that's one form of laziness that we want to overcome. And the way we overcome it is by thinking that our life doesn't last forever, so it's really important to put our energy into the things that are important and do it now without putting it off, because we don't know how long we're going to live. And in terms of our spiritual practice, that's something really important for a happy life and for a peaceful death and for our future lives. Okay. The second kind of laziness that joyous effort overcomes, this isn't what we call laziness in regular society, but it's from a spiritual perspective. You're lazy when you're very busy doing all sorts of unnecessary things. Okay, that's a form of laziness. So, you know, in our society, everybody's saying you have to have a life. which means you have to be so busy that you don't have any time to sit and breathe and think. And if you, you know, don't have every single minute of your life filled with some kind of engagement, then you must be some, like, just drop out somebody who can't do anything, you know? So we all try to keep ourselves incredibly busy. Yeah, so we don't have to even look at what's inside our own heart. So, you know, we run from here, we run from there, you have your phone with you, you can't put your phone down, you've got to be checking it all the time, because there might be one incredibly interesting text message from your friend that says, where are you? But, you know, you can't miss it, and, you know, and you've got to see this movie and that soap opera and run here and there and do everything everybody else is doing and keep yourself so busy. Yeah, you've got to work overtime, and you've got to impress your boss, and you've got to have this fantastic social life, and you've got to this and that, and, you know, so that every evening you just, like, in bed because you're, you know, exhausted, and emotionally you're frazzled. So keeping ourselves very busy doing worldly activities from a spiritual viewpoint is a kind of laziness, because we're lazy in doing what's important, which is our spiritual practice. Okay? You getting what I'm saying? It's an interesting way to look at laziness, keeping ourselves so that we're the busiest of the busy is laziness. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we counteract that kind of laziness by thinking, if we continue to be busy, you know, keep ourselves so busy like that, then we're never going to get any spiritual practice done. So we'll never experience the benefits of our spiritual practice in this life or in future lives. And in addition, because we're so busy doing all these, you know, kind of sometimes really dumb things, we'll wind up accumulating a lot of destructive karma because we're not being very conscientious about our ethical principles, or really sitting and thinking about the effect of our actions on other people. And, you know, when we're too busy to think of the effect of our actions on others, then we just do any old thing, don't we? Yeah. So thinking like that helps us, settle down and contemplate what's more important. Then the third kind of laziness, this is really interesting, yeah? Self-deprecation, yeah? So putting ourselves down, low self-esteem, criticizing ourselves, feeling like we're hopeless, that's a form of laziness. Isn't that interesting? Did you ever think of that as being laziness? Usually, when we have those kind of thoughts, we think that those thoughts are true, and we really are hopeless and helpless and, you know, poor quality and can't get anything accomplished. So just let's give up before we even start. Yeah? So when I first read that, I went, wow. They call that laziness. And, you know, from a spiritual viewpoint, where we are training to see that we all have the potential to become a fully awakened Buddha, that we all have this amazing, you know, human potential that we can develop, that when we ignore that potential and we just think that we're worthless, we are being lazy, because that whole self-deprecating view keeps us pushed down, and then again, we don't do anything. We give up before we've even tried. So it's interesting to look in our lives and see, you know, what are the areas where we've had a lot of this self-criticism, to the extent that we give up on ourselves before we've even tried to do something. And here I always remember, and I always speak about, because I taught third grade before I became a nun, and there was a little boy named Tyrone. And somebody had told Tyrone somewhere along the line that he was stupid, or something like that, because Tyrone, in third grade, this is like, how old is he, 8, 9 years old, you know, felt like he couldn't learn to read. He had that idea, you know, I can't learn to read because I'm dumb. Tyrone was not dumb. He was very capable. But because he had this poor quality view, he couldn't learn to read. So it was not lack of intelligence, yeah? And it was not dyslexia. It was self-image. And so, you know, when you think about it, so many of us have this kind of self-image where we just say, you know, I can't do anything right, and, you know, I'm totally unlovable, and my life's a mess, and you're not very smart, and, you know. What was the thing we said when we were kids? Nobody likes me, everybody hates me, think I'll eat some worms. Yeah, remember that? You know? I don't know where the worms came into it. Anybody know the history of this little jingle? Okay. Do you remember that? Yeah? Yeah? Did they have it in Denmark? No? In France? No? In Germany? No? Okay, maybe you had some other ones that were just as bad. Anyway, so Americans, you know, our speciality is Americans. You know, we eat worms. I'm joking. You know, but we have, you know, under all of our grandiosity, there's this, you know, I'm not good enough view. Okay? And so that really, that it's only a thought, yeah? But thoughts can be so powerful, you know? It's only a thought, but that thought impedes us from growing and blossoming and learning and contributing and loving and doing so many things, yeah? And it's really a pity, isn't it? And that's considered a form of laziness. Yeah, because we give up on ourselves. We don't try. So the remedy to that one is to remember our Buddha nature, remember our potential, remember that we have, you know, some love and compassion and wisdom and generosity and, you know, all these good qualities in us right now. They're underdeveloped, but we have them. They can never be removed from our mind. So, you know, if we just put in some energy, we'll develop them. And, you know, because cause brings effect. So if we put in some energy to develop these qualities, of course the good qualities are going to increase. Okay, so remembering our Buddha nature, remembering our precious human life, that we have this amazing opportunity as human beings to practice right now. That also gives us a lot of inspiration and, you know, energy to do our spiritual practice. And of course, when we do the practice, then we experience the beneficial results. Okay? So joyous effort, you know, this is the quality we're trying to develop here. So it's the joyous effort, yeah. It's not drag yourself along because you should do something kind of effort, okay? Which sometimes that's the kind of effort we get into. It's like, well, I really don't want to do this, but I have to. And if you bring that kind of attitude into your spiritual practice, your practice is not going to last very long. Yeah, because nobody likes feeling obliged to do something, and nobody likes, you know, shoulds and ought tos and supposed tos and have tos. Okay. But most of the time we're doing that to ourselves. Nobody else in our spiritual world is standing there saying, "You lazy bum, why don't you have a daily practice?" You know, nobody says that to us. We say it to ourselves. Okay? This is part of the self-talk, self-criticism thing. You know, "Oh, everybody else has a daily practice. I'm so stupid, I can't do it. I'm just too lazy." You know, and we put ourselves down. You know, or we say, "Oh, so-and-so's going to be really disappointed if I don't do my practice, if I don't go to teachings. So I should go, then, you know, I'll feel like I've done my duty." Boy, that's no fun, is it? Yeah. So what we want to do to develop joyous effort is really see the benefits of our spiritual practice. And when we see the benefit, then, of course, we're quite eager to practice. It's like with anything. When you see the benefit, you want to do it. I mean, people go and get out and get an education. Yeah. Does anybody like studying all these different things and taking exams and writing long papers that nobody reads and taking exams that, you know, did a lot of things. I mean, some people, you know, if you have a really good professor and a good class, it's really good. But lots of times you just have classes that are like boring, but you do them anyway. Why? Because you need an education. Why do you need an education? I want to make some money. Okay, so we put up with what we have to do in order to get the job to make the money. Okay. Now, from a Buddhist viewpoint, yeah, because we're thinking not just of this life, but of future lives, money comes, and as we all know, money goes. And when you die, your money does not go with you. It stays here. Yeah. So at the time of death, you know, money is not really important. What's more important then is the quality of our spiritual practice, you know, and the quality of the kind of actions we've done. If we've planted the seeds of good karma in our own mind stream, you know, if we've increased our impartiality towards others, our love, compassion, and so forth. These are the kinds of things that are very important when we die, that we want to make sure that we cultivate while we're alive. So when we really see the benefit of those qualities, how, you know, when we have those inner qualities, our life is better now, more peaceful now, less conflict, better relationships with others. We're able to die peacefully in our future life. You know, we have the seeds of good karma so that we can have a good rebirth. We can progress towards liberation and full awakening. So when we see that the benefits of our spiritual practice, then there's a feeling of, "Yo, gee, I want to practice." And we get some joyous effort there. Yeah, and it becomes a joy to practice. And of course, once you start practicing, then, and you see the results, then, you know, your motivation really changes. Sometimes at the beginning, you have to nudge yourself. Yeah, because otherwise we're just like, we're like pancakes, you know, we just lie there. So sometimes we really need to nudge ourselves and encourage ourselves or discipline ourselves, you know. You make a schedule, and I'm going to stick to this schedule. Or what I often tell people, if they can't seem to make it to the meditation cushion in the morning, you know, put in your diary, you know, what you do each day. 6 o'clock every morning, I have an appointment with the Buddha. Yeah? Then the night before, if somebody wants you to stay up late, you say, "Oh, gee, I can't. I have an early morning appointment. I gotta go to bed early." then you make sure you get to bed early, then you can get up in the morning, then you can do your practice. Okay? Because you don't want to break an appointment with the Buddha. That's not so good, is it? Okay? So we want to have this attitude of joy when we practice. And it's kind of contagious. And you really see this in the people who practice very well. They're quite happy. You know, if you look at His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, yeah, he's a happy individual, even though he's been a refugee since he was 24 years old. Yeah, he doesn't drag himself around. I just was thinking about his upcoming teaching schedule in December. He's like going for 1 month straight, every single day, all day. I get exhausted thinking about it, and I'm younger than him. And, you know, but His Holiness, it's like, he just loves to do that. He'll get up there and teach, and he'll... I mean, the schedule he keeps is amazing. Like when he has these teachings in South India, he'll teach 3 hours in the morning, two and a half hours in the afternoon. There's a lunch break of an hour and a half. He probably spends 20 minutes eating, and the rest of the time there's appointments. Yeah, before he starts teaching in the morning, there's appointments. After he ends teaching in the afternoon, there's more appointments. Yeah. And yet he's always kind of joyful and happy. So, you know, when people really have a motivation of compassion, then, you know, that comes across. It gives them incredible energy. Yeah. So, I wanted to read you a story here. The story will sound very familiar to one of our nuns. Okay? It's a story about Sergeant Joy S. Effort. Okay? And how you transform. Because, you know, with each of the verses, I ask people to tell me, you give me stories about how they practice these verses in their own daily lives and how they use them to transform themselves. So this is... we changed the name in the book, but it's somebody who lives here. But I think she'll probably let you know. Okay. So I didn't write it as a story at the Abbey. I wrote it as somebody who's doing just a regular job. Okay, so it says, for my first few years at a new job, I prided myself on the effort I put out, but didn't really understand the concept of joyous. Mine was imposed effort. As time went on, a caricature appeared of this outstanding competent worker who could get everything done efficiently. At first, I created her unintentionally because I thought she was quite lovely and remarkable. But in my mind, everyone at my workplace loved her, and the company, you know, this is what she was thinking in my mind, everybody at my workplace loved her, and the company could not last without her for any period of time. So you know how we feel like we're indispensable? And if we're not there to get everybody, you know, going, the whole place is going to crash. Okay. At one of our office skits, I officially created her, Sergeant Joy S. Effort. And everyone laughed. Thereafter, Sergeant Joy S. Effort began to take on a life of her own. And for the following 2 years, I felt I had to uphold, sustain, and embody her through thick or thin, darkness or light, snow, hail, and sleet. Okay? Because the Abbey was going to fall apart otherwise. Right? Okay. Eventually, I crashed into a wall, figuratively, and had months of health problems that were rooted in pushing myself. I had to stop and rethink my approach. In another office skit, Sergeant Joyous Effort went on a permanent holiday to the Bahamas, bless her heart, and may she never return. Yeah. If she does, the loving community I live with will remind me that she is on permanent vacation. For my new life, as I recreate myself once again, I'm trying not to make the self too solid. Sergeant Joyous Effort has become a symbol of all the things Joyous Effort is not. It was great in the first skit that she did. You know, she dressed up like with fatigues, and you had a stick and a chart, and you were showing the layout. This is Bodhisattva Boot Camp, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you know, okay, stand up, you know, get in line, march into the meditation hall, salute to the Buddha, sit down. Joyous Effort is not about striving, dictating, controlling, imposing authority, or driving myself and others to the point of exhaustion. Okay. Now I'm learning to understand what Joyous Effort is, mostly because I'm still recovering my health and I don't have much effort these days, even though I have an increasing amount of joy. One of my personal aspirations this year is to be able to define for myself, as well as to model for others, the practice of far-reaching joyous effort. I hope to inspire myself and others with lightheartedness, fortitude, and self-acceptance. With joyous effort, we have the capacity to do what is possible to the best of our ability. In this way, we attain great results. Okay, so, you know, joyous effort, you know, has to be like that. It has to be joyous, yeah, and fun, and where there's a sense of enthusiasm. And like I said, that comes about through seeing the benefits of what we're doing, yeah. So joyous effort isn't about being heavy-handed. It's not about, you know, kind of beating up on ourselves or trying to control others. Yeah, it's really about having this nature of joy, so that whatever you're doing, your feeling of enthusiasm spreads to the people around you, and everybody wants to join in and do it. Okay, and with Buddhism, you know, that's really possible because there's, you know, we say that every action can be transformed into a Dharma action through changing our motivation. Yeah. So, you know, instead of like, oh, more dishes to wash, I washed them yesterday, why doesn't somebody else wash them today? You know, it's like, oh, I get to offer service to the community. I get to help others out. And then you think, when you're washing the dishes, that you're washing the defilements from the minds of sentient beings. Or when you're vacuuming, you're cleaning up the, you know, the anger and attachment and so on from the minds of sentient beings. So you can, you know, take these kind of imaginings into the actual action, what you're doing. When you're walking upstairs, you know, I'm leading sentient beings to awakening. When you're going downstairs, I'm going down to the unfortunate realms to benefit others. Okay, and so to really, you know, transform all the actions we do in our life so that we have a sense of joy doing them. You know, and that really, you know, when we can do that, it really transforms things, because then we, you know, we stop complaining so much. It's not like, oh, I did this, I did this, and I did this, and I did that. Do you guys know how much I did? And what were you doing at the time when I was doing this, that? You know? And I worked so hard for you, and you don't appreciate What did I do to deserve this? Yeah, remember that? So instead of getting into that, you know, just being happy doing what you're doing because you're contributing to the well-being of other living beings. Okay, so there's some time for comments or questions. Do you have them?
I wanted to make a comment about the thing I went through with the Carmelites. Mm-hmm. Sister Nancy, who's coming up to her 50 years.
Can everybody hear her?
This friend of ours is a Carmelite nun, is coming up to her 50 years of being a nun, and they had this Q&A at the end of the day, this Catholic event, and it was kind of like, what do you do to get ready for your meditation, for their prayer sessions? And it was so interesting to me what she said. She said, when I'm on my way there, I'm already getting into this joyful place because I'm so happy to be going. And I was like, wow, 50 years of this. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it was just the most heartfelt and answer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm having a little difficulty with the joyous part, really, because, I mean, I get that I shouldn't feel obligated
See how you put that already? I shouldn't feel obligated.
Yeah. Well, I
how about, I don't want to feel obligated.
Okay, that's a good point.
That changes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I do, there are times when I do feel enthusiastic about practicing, but I don't know that when you said it should be fun and joyous, I don't know that it's realistic necessarily that I always feel that way when I'm making an effort. Like, you know, I don't know. If I had joy all the time, I would be a Buddha.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, I just, maybe is it a matter of making the effort, then the joy will come later? Or
yeah. Well, I think you don't want to have this idea of fun in your mind. Because when we think of fun, we think of, you know, going to the park and skipping around and, you know, balloons and kites and, you know. It's not that Dharma practice is fun like that, okay? But it's something that settles your mind, brings peace in your heart, enables you to process what's happened in the day, enables you to get in touch with your good qualities and increase them, yeah? And so, when you think about doing that, don't, you know, that kind of thing isn't fun like, you know, making s'mores at the beach. But it's, you know, but it's something that's definitely worthwhile and beneficial that you will feel good after you do it. Yeah. So if you can remember, you know, that you'll feel good after you do it, then, you have some energy to, oh yeah, I'm doing this to help myself be a happy individual. Yeah. Okay. So you take the shoulds and ought tos and supposed tos out. And I know for me, one thing that was a big mind changer regarding the shoulds and ought tos and supposed tos, which I had a lot of when I first started practicing. I was in Nepal and, you know, oh, I should, you know, do more meditation. I should, because I was staying at a monastery. I should do this, I should do that, because all these other people are doing it. And I wasn't even notice how much I was shoulding myself. Yeah. And then I got hepatitis, hep A, and hep A just knocks you flat. And I couldn't move, you know, I was just like, no energy. And somebody brought me this book called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons, which was all about karma and cause and effect. And there was one verse in it about, you know, when your body is racked with pain and you're exhausted and, you know, you have physical difficulties, it's because of having harmed other people's bodies before. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, wow, you know, I'm suffering this now because of my uncontrolled selfish actions that I did in the past. Yeah, so this whole thing about, you know, our actions bringing results, that's really true. And I don't like this result of being so sick, so I need to stop doing these kinds of actions that harm others. And that really changed things for me, because then instead of like, I should keep my precepts, it was like, I want to keep my precepts. And instead of, you know, I should, you know, meditate, it was like, I want to do purification practice or whatever it is. Yeah, because it's nothing like getting sick to like, you know, if you believe in karma, it's like, okay, this is due to my own actions and I have to change. And that gives you a lot of positive energy to change, because you realize that, you know, we're creating the causes for our own future. Mm-hmm. So when we think like that, then of course we all want to be happy, don't we? We all want to have a good future. So if we want that, then with joy we can go about creating the causes for it now. And with joy abstaining from all the things we do that prevent us from having a good future. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would you say that, rather than I should or whatever, like as you go into meditation, maybe you don't quite feel that joy like you're describing, but reminding yourself of kind of the joyful consequences, like if I do this, help my mind and I'll be able to help others and et cetera.
Right, exactly.
Is that kind of a way to generate?
Yeah. So when we say joyous effort, it doesn't mean you're skipping into the meditation hall. You know, oh goody, I get to go meditate. This is so much fun. It's not like that. Okay. But, you know, you do it because you know that it's beneficial for yourself and others, and you remind yourself of that. Yeah. And then your mind is, you know, happy to go do that. You don't see it as like, oh God, I gotta sit there in this hall for an hour. You know, because if you have that kind of feeling towards your practice, you're certainly not gonna do it, are you?
That's why I do hear about vacuuming and cleaning bathrooms. You're good at it.
Yeah. Keep your energy up. And this is something I really appreciate about the Buddha's teaching, is there's so many different ways to transform your mind. Like lots of times I have to do things I don't feel like doing. Yeah. So, I think, you know, when those situations happen, I think, you know, my long-term vision is I would want to become a bodhisattva and then a Buddha to be able to benefit others. And, you know, bodhisattvas and Buddhas don't drag themselves everywhere. And they do lots of things that, you know, may not be their favorite thing to do, but they're happy to do them. So now I have a chance, an opportunity to kind of overcome my own laziness, my own, that's basically what it is, my own self-indulgence. So this is a good opportunity for me, and I need to practice it if I'm ever to think of becoming a bodhisattva. Because I've got to get rid of this kind of attitude of like, oh God, I can't do it. You know, because if I go through my life with that attitude, I'm going to be miserable. There's no way I'm ever going to progress on a spiritual path. Yeah? So, okay, this is my opportunity right now to work with this mind and transform it. Because if I don't, I'm just going to do my same old thing. You know, grumble. Yeah. And we all know what grumbling brings us.
More
grumbling. Yeah, more grumbling. We grumble, then the people around us don't like when we grumble, so they grumble about us. Yeah, then we grumble some more. Nothing, you know, nothing changes. Everybody just gets mad. It doesn't bring anything. Yeah. Whereas, you know, when it's like every time we hit a bump in the road, instead of reacting to it with, okay, this is too much, I quit. You know, it's like, okay, there's a bump in the road. How am I going to get over this bump? You know, it's a bump. It's not a mountain. It's a bump, you know. So how am I going to get over this bump? And you use your creativity to devise an inner plan to get over the bump. And you eventually succeed in doing it, you know. If it were a mountain, if it were Mount Everest, okay, then maybe difficult. But, you know, our bumps are merely bumps. So what is it? Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. Yeah. Do you have that one in Germany?
We must.
But you don't know it. Okay.
Could also be that, like, there's a part of my mind that wants instant gratification because, you know, there's I feel like the reason to have joy suffers. I want to see those results right away.
Yeah.
That's of course not realistic.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually a cultural thing. We're very ingrained with, you know, I want instant gratification. And this is actually something quite harmful to our minds and to our society. Yeah. Because good things don't come instantly. And instant gratification is usually instantly gone.
Suppose you were applying joyous effort to a job which involved like an area where there were a number of people, and you began your effort and all of a sudden everybody's angry at you for disturbing, like, for instance, a loud vacuum cleaner or whatever, something like that. And how do you maintain your joyous feelings while people are complaining about what you're doing?
You mean you're coming in and doing a lot of work and then they feel like they're being seen as lazy for not keeping up with you, or?
No, they're watching TV, a football game or, you know, basketball game, and you're making noise in the vacuum and they can't hear. But this was your job, and you were told that you want to do it with the right.
You want to do it. Well, you know, tell them to wear earphones when they watch the football game.
And say it with pleasantly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, I don't have a lot of spare time. I need to vacuum the house right now. I know you're watching the football game. I know you don't want to be interrupted. How about putting on some earplugs and I'll vacuum quickly and then it'll be over and you'll have a clean place. Something like that.
Yeah? But you can't maintain that joyous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why not? Yeah. Our happiness shouldn't depend on other people's moods. Because, other people's moods are completely unreliable.
Or their appreciation.
Hmm?
Or their appreciation.
Or their appreciation, right. Yeah. Okay, so we'll dedicate.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened seat of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering, May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful tent and gatso chen resi, may you stay in.